2015, of the Public Financing Advisory Committee. May I have roll call, starting at my left?
John Moore.
Lisa Hughes.
Tom Hammond.
Carl Groner.
Michelle Aguirre.
Michelle Aguirre, you are sitting in for Frank Kim?
Frank Kim, correct.
All right. Do we have a quorum?
Suzanne Lester, CEO, Public Finance. Yes, we do have a quorum.
Thank you. And with that, I'd like to, we had a chance to review the minutes of the August 27th, 2015 meeting. Do I hear a motion for approval?
Also move.
Second, anybody?
Second.
Any discussion, additions, changes, deletions?
Not aye.
Hearing none, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Not voting, wasn't present.
Then we don't have a quorum to approve them.
Well, we'll approve them at the next meeting.
Okay, pass for approval. When is our next meeting, Ms. Lester?
The next meeting is currently scheduled for October, excuse me, October 8th. I think we were going to have a discussion about that at the, probably at the end of the meeting, because it sounded like at least one person couldn't make it, and so we were gonna discuss the reschedule.
Okay. So we will table the approval of the minutes until the next meeting, whatever date it's going to be. With that, that leaves us to our first agenda item, which is to approve selection of Stradling Yaka, ITSEC, as disclosure counsel for the 800 millihertz countywide coordinated communication system upgrade financing. Say that three times. Ms. Lester, who's going to be presenting?
Thank you, Chair Hughes. I would like to ask Lewis McClure of CEO Public Finance to give the presentation.
Thank you, Suzanne. As you mentioned, item three is for the selection of Stradling as disclosure counsel for the 800 megahertz upgrade project. Just a quick background, you may recall that the 800 megahertz system is a public safety radio system that allows all law enforcement, fire, public works, and lifeguard agencies in the County of Orange to communicate seamlessly when required. This system is nearing the end of its useful life and will systematically be replaced by the Orange County Sheriff's Department. In April 2015, PFAC and the board both approved the concept of the financing of the 800 megahertz project. At that time, the financial advisor and the underwriter were also selected. And in June of 2015, PFAC approved the selection of Orrick, Harrington, and Sutcliffe as bond counsel. Selection of disclosure counsel will complete the financing team and allow us to move forward with the 800 megahertz financing. To that end, an invitation for bid was sent out to all disclosure counsels on the county current panel of qualified consultants. Of those, six responded. The table on page two of the staff report lists the various firms and their respective bids. Stradling was the lowest bidder with a bid of $35,000 and no charge for expenses. Stradling is a local firm and the county has worked with them on many successful financings over the years. Some examples include our past CFD financings, two recent development agency refinancings, the upcoming central utility facility financing, and the CFD financing that will be discussed later today. In conclusion, approval of Stradling today will allow the team to structure the financing and draft the documents for the 800 megahertz project. Staff will return, as always, to PFAC and the board for final approval of the financing once the details and the documents are developed. If approved today, we expect to take this item to the Board of Supervisors on September 22nd.
Our bond counsel is Orrick?
Correct.
They didn't bid?
No, they did not.
Do we know why? Yes, Susan.
Suzanne Lester, CEO, Public Finance. It was not intentional. I talked to the counsel from Orrick, and there was a crossing of wires between a couple of the partners, because I was actually surprised that they did not bid. It was not intentional. They had intended to bid, but they didn't.
Well, all right. That explains that. All right. Any questions?
I do. I think this process is questionable. And is anybody from Squire Patton here?
I don't believe so.
And did they, Squire Patton, well, to back up, this deal, we did not get a quorum to approve Squire Patton in the last meeting. And the issues, as best I could tell from the debate, were that in the grid, Squire Patton had the highest score, and the staff recommended Squire Patton. Also, there was a debate about whether we needed separate bond counsel and disclosure counsel. So therefore, there was some confusion, and we did not, and we didn't have a majority. So you had to put this whole process out to bid again. And you picked Stradling over Squire Patton over a $1,000 expense bill. Did they change, did Stradling change, excuse me, did Squire Patton change their bid or their proposal?
No, they did not.
And did Stradling know what the bid was from Squire Patton and they bid $1,000 less?
The Stradling bid was the same as their previous bid.
Well, then what changed in the grid that made Stradling better than Squire Patton? If both bids were identical the first time around, why did you pick Stradling this time and Squire Patton last time?
So the through the chair, committee member Hammond, the previous process was a request for proposal, which then we convened an evaluation committee. This process was an invitation to bid, which means we are recommending the lowest responsible bidder. So it's the process that changed.
But they were identical submissions, and your last process, you're saying is superior than the previous process you did?
Public Finance prefers to go through an RFP process so that we can evaluate proposals, we can evaluate experience and expertise, areas of expertise. You know, we had a chance to review all the previous proposals twice, and we were satisfied that the proposals that had previously been provided were from qualified candidates. So in the interest of moving this very, very critical county project forward, we decided to go for this procurement only. We expect an invitation to bid process.
Mr. Moore?
So, but again, with the bids, whether you call it an RFP or an invitation to bid, whatever you call it, the submissions were the same, but you made a different decision.
The submissions were not exactly the same. In an invitation to bid, we put out the scope and the qualifications and the requirements, and then we ask the proposers to certify as to their qualifications, and then we ask them to make a bid.
Madam Chairman.
Mr. Moore.
Didn't these people come off the list that we had previously approved as far as their professional qualifications? We didn't just go out and run an ad in the paper and said, anybody want to put a bid in, come see us. We spent time narrowing the list of people who we said were qualified to bid. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
We have a qualified panel that we go through a qualification process. But that qualification process is a minimum qualification process. It does not guarantee or represent that all firms are created equal.
I'll bet you that we lost a potential vendor here because of this. If I were Squire Patton Boggs, I would be very upset with the County of Orange the way this was handled, starting with PFAC. It was our fault for doing that.
Well,
it was.
That's your opinion, and we all respect that. But I have a question. Squire Patton, that was the L.A. firm, right?
No, Cleveland. They have an office in L.A., right?
Yes, Harriet Welch, the partner who represented the firm here, is from the L.A. office.
Right, it was L.A., and that was one of the concerns that some of us had. And if I remember right, the history of dealing with the county was minimal, if not non-existent, right?
That's correct, but they had extensive experience with all our neighbors.
Understand that.
Correct.
But they were an L.A. firm with little or no experience, and Stradling has a long history with us. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Any other comments, questions?
No, I made my point.
Point well taken, Mr. Hammond. I think process, though, is important. Any other comments from staff? Do I hear a motion to approve Stradling Yaka's bond disclosure council?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
I'm not going to second.
I will second.
And I'll vote for it, yes.
Okay. Any further discussion before we call the vote? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? It's unanimous. And by the way, thank you for your good work on this.
You're welcome.
Item number two, the approval of the issuance of the Series A Special Tax Bonds and Community Facilities District 2015-1. Ms. Lester, who is presenting?
That would be me. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the PFAT Committee. My name is Suzanne Lester, CEO Public Finance Director. Today, CEO Public Finance is requesting your committee's approval and recommendation to issue the Series A Special Tax Bonds for Community Facilities District 2015-1, Village of Ascensia. I'd like to start with a brief background. I will try not to just duplicate everything that's in the staff report, but I think it's important to start with a little bit of background. In November 2004, the Board of Supervisors approved the Ranch Plan Development Agreement between the County of Orange and Rancho Mission Viejo that allows up to 14,000 dwelling units, as well as retail, office, and recreation uses. Approximately 7,700 acres of the 15,000 acres of the ranch will remain as open space. As part of the ranch plan development, the developer, Rancho Mission Viejo, requested the formation of multiple CFDs, community facilities districts, pursuant to the Mello-Roos Act of 1982, to finance public facilities and improvements that will serve the community. Phase one of the Village of Ascensia consists of approximately 417 gross acres and is located in unincorporated Orange County, east of San Juan Capistrano, and just south of the community of Ladera Ranch. Phase one is made up of 12 residential projects consisting of 840 for sale residential units, 113 unit affordable housing project, and 150 unit market rate apartments. There's also a 1 acre parcel planned for a daycare center and a 14 acre parcel that is to be conveyed to the Capistrano Unified School District for a K through 8 school. The remainder of the property is anticipated to be used for parks, recreation, and open space. The merchant builders in phase one are William Lyon Homes, Shea Homes, TriPoint, Ryland, Meritage, Warmington, and Standard Pacific. On April 14, 2015, the Board of Supervisors adopted resolutions to establish CFD 2015-1, authorized the levy of a special tax with the CFD, determined necessity to incur bond indebtedness, and then called for an election of the landowners within CFD 2015-1. On April 16, of 2015, the landowners voted to approve the issuance of bonds not to exceed $110 million. On May 5th, the Board of Supervisors, acting as the legislative body of the district, adopted an ordinance that authorized the levy of a special tax in accordance with the rate and method of apportionment that was approved at the election. Consistent with the County of Orange's conservative policies, the county filed a complaint with the Superior Court on May 5th, 2015, seeking judicial validation of the formation of CFD 2015-1. On July 16th, the court entered a default judgment validating actions with respect to the CFD formation, incurrence of the bond indebtedness, and levy of the special tax. The appeal period for that validation expired August 15, 2015. At the end of July, most of the committee members, most of you, had the opportunity to tour CFD 2015-1, Village of Ascensia, to view the location of the CFD, the building and improvements in progress, and even I think we saw the location of where the next phase of the CFD is planned. At the time, the builder models were under construction, and the roads and the infrastructure were pretty much completed. The community grand opening is scheduled for September 20th, 2015. At last month's PFAC meeting, the county's financial advisor, Tom DeMars of Fieldman Rollap and Associates, gave a presentation to your committee, providing a preview of the CFD and the proposed financing. And for the committee members who were not present last month, we sent you the presentation for your review and reference. Moving on to the bond issuance, the estimated principal amount of the Series A bonds is $90.9 million. The bond proceeds will be used to construct and acquire public facilities and improvements, to fund a bond reserve, and pay the cost of forming the CFD and issuing the bonds. The debt service on the bonds is for a 30-year period, which is consistent with prior county CFDs. The bonds are not rated, and the sizing of the bonds assumes an assumption of a true interest cost of 4.79%. The public facilities that are authorized include roads, regional hiking and biking trails, storm drains, water and wastewater facilities, bridges, parks, traffic signals, and school facilities, and other. On the tour.
A reference to the papers, dry utilities, wasn't sure what that was.
The dry
utilities.
I think the dry utilities are something different.
Electrical.
On the tour, we saw many of these improvements. We traveled on Cow Camp Road, which is a major road in the community that stretches throughout. We went over a major bridge that was constructed for access to the community. There's a contribution to Lapata Avenue Extension, which is a major county road connecting Ortega Highway to the city of San Clemente, is also an eligible improvement. A majority of the improvements to be funded by the proposed proceeds have already been constructed. Now, in your package, I know there's an overwhelming amount of reports and studies related to the bond issuance, the project, and the sizing. I'd like to highlight the policy compliance report prepared by the county's financial advisor, Fieldman Rollap and Associates. The report provides an executive summary of the project and confirms an opinion on the compliance with county policies and standards of the California Debt and Investment Advisory Commission.
highlights of the report conclusions are that the district serves a community need for housing. The special taxes imposed to repay the debt are related to the use and cost of the finance facilities. The total estimated tax burden does not exceed 2% of the assessed or market value of the property. An independent economist, Empire Economics, and an independent real estate appraiser, Harris Realty Appraisal, were engaged to evaluate the proposed financing from an economic, tax burden, and property value viewpoint. The appraised value was $290.2 million as of July 1, 2015, which allows for a 3-to-1 value-to-lien test to be met, which is county policy and industry practice. The economics and absorption analysis conducted by Empire Economics is favorable, projecting a build-out by 2018. The developer has a strong management and financial record and is experienced and successful. There is also a diversity of the merchant builders who are all also are experienced and successful. The CFD formation and finance development process has been consistent with the county's previous 23 CFDs, which have also all resulted in successful bond issuances and communities. The county has never had a bond default using the same conservative policies. As a way to conclude my comments, I would like to just refresh the committee's recollection of some of the safeguards that are in place for the County of Orange. The special taxes that are collected from the property owners are pledged to pay the bonds. The proposed bonds are not an obligation of the County of Orange. The CFD formation and proposed finance received a judicial validation. Not all jurisdictions take this extra step in the process to provide that legal validation. There is a judicial foreclosure provision that is provided after 1 year of delinquency. That is included. And then finally, the district is included in the county's TEETER program, which means the county will make that property tax collection for the district whole each year. And for assuming that collection risk, the county then receives the penalties and interest associated.
May I interrupt? Will the TEETER, it'll guarantee payment for the 2%, plus will they also guarantee payment for the Miller Roos portion?
Yes.
So in other words,
yes,
the taxes and the Miller Roos is covered in the TEETER plan?
Yes.
All right, thank you.
It's to a max of 2%.
No, it's 2% plus the TEETER. Plus the special
The 2% is the total. The 2% policy is total, including all. It's the 1% ad valorem plus all overlapping debt, and our policy is to be in compliance at the time of grand opening or first sale. That's correct.
Does that mean that the county's taking less money for their tax rate? In other words, if you sell a house for $1 million, there should be a $20,000 your tax bill. But now a big chunk of that goes to the Miller Roos. Does that mean the county gets less money from their taxes?
No. The county receives its portion. There's the 1% ad valorem that then, you know, the County of Orange is a donor county. The County of Orange, and this is set up in statute at the state, we're number 58 of 58 counties on how much property tax for the dollar that it receives back. but the issuance of a CFD doesn't reduce the county's share of property tax.
So the ad valorem is always 1% plus the water district plus the plus whatever else?
Correct.
And when you throw in the special tax, it can't exceed 2%.
That's correct.
Right, that's the law.
That's the county's policy, and that's industry standard according to the California Debt and Investment Advisory Commission.
Didn't know that.
Learn something new every day.
Well, when the let's assume that the bonds are paid off in 30 years, can the county raise its basic tax rate to 2%?
No.
It's ad valorem. You can't.
No.
So, in other words, the taxes, the 2%. Well, everybody else pays 2%. They'll be paying substantially less when the bonds are paid off.
That's correct, and I guess you could say that would put a property owner similar to other communities that don't have Mellerus debt. But in this case, the property owners will have paid for all those improvements that they receive the benefit of.
But the fallacy of it is the average time that we turn over homes in the state of California is, what, 5 to 7 years? Somebody knows that statistic. So they'd reassess them anyway.
Mm-hmm. But you only get reassessed to 1% after 30 years, not 2. You'd only get reassessed on the ad valorem. You wouldn't get Mellerus with sunset once you retire the bonds.
So, you know, the way it appears on the property tax, there's the 1%, and then there's the special tax, and then if there's a water district tax, and then if you pay a fire ant or a vector control, you know, there's the listing, but all of those at the time of our bond issuance, it's the county's policy that should not exceed 2% max.
May I ask a question? The policy of the 2%, that is a guideline, not a hard restriction. So in the case where the market value, after we approve this bond deal and we go to market, the market value of the sellout goes down, and the effective tax rate goes north of 2%, we may still proceed. The developer may proceed to sell out, and there's no impingement on those bonds whatsoever, right? This is a policy guideline, and it's set at the outset of the project, correct?
That's correct, and it is a county policy approved by the Board of Supervisors, but it does state that the county will ensure, do its best to ensure that at the time of bond issuance or grand opening, that it does not exceed 2%. You know, 6 months, a year down the road, we don't have control over the market beyond that.
Well, when somebody buys a house that doesn't have a Mellerus in Orange County, the property is reassessed at 1%. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And so the fact that you have a Mellerus on it allows it to go to 2%, or not to exceed 2%.
Along with the other stuff that's there.
Correct. I mean,
including the water district bonds and everything else.
You know, when there's a change of ownership, there's a reassessment at market value, the 1%,
right.
And then the other assessments that may be on top of that.
But the Mellerus stays fixed.
Unless it's refinanced at lower rates or something like that, right?
Correct. So
it doesn't go up on ad valorem on the house. It's just, it is what it is.
Right. The special tax is based on the rate and method of apportionment based on benefit received, which the county uses square footage to differentiate between benefit.
Wasn't there some low-income housing in this group?
Yes, and that's a low-income housing, affordable housing apartment project.
Right. And how does that work as far as the Mellerus?
I would have to pull the documents and the rate and method, but Andrea?
Thank you. Andrea Ress with David Taussig and Associates. The affordable apartments and the regular apartments have a fixed rate per unit. It's not based on the size of the unit, but there's a different differentials in the rate. So the affordable units pay less than the non-affordable apartments.
That's why they call it affordable.
Correct.
Thank you.
If there aren't any additional questions at this point, I just wanted to conclude my comments by saying that, you know, several of us went out to tour the Village of Ascensia. It's a beautifully developed project serving a community demand and need for housing and associated infrastructure and improvements. The county staff and the finance team proceeded in the formation and finance development in a prudent, analytical, and thorough manner to help ensure the compliance with the county policies and industry practices, as well as to ensure another successful community. That concludes my remarks. We have representatives here from Rancho Mission Viejo, and all the members of our finance team are available to answer any additional questions you might have.
Chair, may I ask? I actually have a question of Ms. Lester. Do you have a budget for the costs for your staff and resources in putting that and working with everybody to put this together?
Yes, we, through the chair, Mr. Groner, we don't have a budget, but what we did at the beginning of the process is the Board of Supervisors approved a reimbursement resolution, and the developer deposited $100,000 in a trust fund that we drew from during the process, because the process has taken about a year and a half. So county staff drew from the trust fund, and we paid the finance team from the trust fund. And then as we drew that down, and we would provide an accounting to Rancho Mission Viejo, when it got to a certain point, they would provide another deposit. We've spent, for the team and the county staff, about $300,000.
Is that direct cost?
I believe it's our billing rate that includes overhead.
So how much of that has been paid?
I think we're almost at $300,000.
Oh, really? Oh, fantastic.
So there will be, you know, there will be some residual, which will gather any remaining invoices that are due for work that's been completed by our consultants. We'll do our final accounting, and that would be paid at the bond issuance.
Well, great.
It's county staff, and who are the financing team? Who are we paying out of that?
So we're paying Fieldman Rolap and Associates, the financial advisor, Stradling Yaka Carlson and Routh, the underwriter Stiefel, and the co-manager Piper Jaffrey. We're paying our appraiser, Harris Realty. We are paying Empire Economics. We had a district engineer prepare an engineer report. I'm not sure if I'm missing, but I mean, it takes a village to prudently analyze the development and formation of one of these CFDs.
Mr. Hammond, you always have a comment.
Actually, my comments are all kind of technical. I mean, if you don't mind. First question is, why did you decide you don't need a separate disclosure and bond counsel in this deal when you kind of thought it was a pretty good idea a month ago?
Well, in it, it probably would have been a good idea, but we formed this finance team before we made that philosophical change in our process. However, we do have the Underwriters Council, Best and Krieger, who is reviewing the POS, and in fact, we have a due diligence call with Best and Krieger next week, where they've provided a list of questions to the county and the ranch to, you know, ensure a process was followed to their satisfaction for their client, which is Stiefel.
Okay. Next question, this is probably better for Mr. DeMars or the representative from Stiefel, which or either one. I have a couple of questions about just definitions and things. Somebody? The question, as I understand these bonds, they're 30 years, and they have like 30 tranches or 20 tranches or multiple tranches. In other words, they're retiring them every single year. Is that correct? Some of it, a portion of it.
Yes, Mr. Hammond, I'm Sarah Brown from Stiefel. And yes, the way we structure the bond issue is to have many maturities. We usually have maturities that are annual through roughly 20 years. And then after that, through the final maturity, which is 30 years, we have 2 to 3 term bonds. And those actually do retire in part each year annually. So the special taxes that are received are going to continually pay down the bond issue.
So you take, what you do, if I got this right, you take the first batch of principal, you pay the first year, the next batch of principal, second year, and so on and so forth.
So every year, the special tax that gets levied has many components. There's a component that pays for the administrative costs of the district and the county's time and third-party expenses like a bond trustee. There's a portion that pays interest on all bonds that are still outstanding. And then there's a portion that is used or is budgeted to retire some amount of bonds. And so when we go out the door to sell the bonds, an investor can buy a bond that matures in 2016, one that matures in 17, 18, and so on and so forth, all the way to 2045. And so each of those then annual special tax levies has a portion that will pay for that portion of the debt that matures in such year.
Okay, I understand. So now the last 10 years is, and you build up, is that what you call the sinking fund? Is that the definition of the sinking fund?
Yeah, that it is. And we don't actually build it up. It's almost as if the bonds, like you're almost doing a partial prepayment of a term bond, so that
we used to call that the residual. Okay. So, do you sell the residual piece?
It's not a residual in the sense of like a super sinker.
Yeah.
If you think about it like that, there's actually scheduled redemption amounts for that term bond. So, when an investor goes and buys the 2045 term bond, and just for simplicity of the math, assuming it's a $10 million term bond, it might have 5 sinking fund payments of $2 million each. And so somebody that is buying some amount of it knows that they have a 20% share. I mean, if it was $2 million each year, they'd have a 20% chance of having their bonds called away each year. So we're actually, that money comes into the trustee actually calls some of bonds, so that sinking fund amount is retired each year for that 5-year period of its term.
But the way you structured this, there's no one, assuming everybody pays their bills, there's no uncertainty about the amount of principal that's coming back that could pay everybody. It's not like a bet on prepayment or anything like that.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, certainly there is an ability for a homeowner to prepay. And so when we're marketing to this to investors, we are very forthcoming in the fact that any homeowner, any property owner, has an ability to prepay their special tax. So there's an ability there's a quicker retirement, just like a quicker retirement of mortgages if you choose to refinance or prepay it down. But generally, assuming that there are no prepayments, then there's an actual scheduled maturity, scheduled debt service that is precise on day one.
All right. What's the difference between the sinking fund and the reserve fund?
The reserve fund is funded at issuance. Reserve fund is an amount on tax law is limited to an amount that's the lesser of three tests. 10% of par, maximum annual debt service, or 125% of average annual debt service. Now, in this case, because of our debt service, we have escalating debt service that mirrors the escalating special tax stream. So in this case, what we have right now, the lesser of the three tests is maximum annual debt service.
And that goes to the trustee?
Yeah, the trustee holds it, and it is can only be drawn upon if there is a delinquency in the payment of the special tax.
And at the end of the day, what happens to that money?
The end of the day, if it's not used, it's used to make the final debt service payment. So okay, that so there really be a 29-year.
So that's in the calculation of the – so this is a precise calculation of interest and amortization coming back that should pay everybody 9%,
yep.
Including the reserve fund.
Yep. Well, the reserve fund essentially would be used to make the final payment. So instead of levying people for 30 years, you're actually levying them for 29.
Yeah. And I saw, did I see in there that you can't arbitrage this money? In other words, there's no arbitrage allowed by the statute. Did I read that right?
Yeah, you have to pay back. I mean, you have to make rebate calculations.
Right.
And
Okay.
But in this interest rate environment, I mean, good luck with that, yeah. Right?
Thank you. That's what I had.
Okay. Do you have a...
Just a follow-up. You mentioned that you have various tranches for various years. Do you sell that as a ladder to your investors? Do they typically buy a ladder of these bonds?
No. You know, investors, I mean, there are different types of investors, certainly. We envision, and this was the case with Ladera back 15 years ago, we expect that individual retail investors, which are high net worth individuals, lot of them in Orange County or in Southern California generally, will purchase bonds in the short end of the yield curve. So usually individuals like bonds that mature in 10-year time frame because that's sort of their
your age.
I didn't say that. They're budgeting in terms of their retirement or their needs. And so individual retail investors tend to go into the 1 to 10 years. Large institutions, names like Franklin Templeton, Nuveen, Oppenheimer, ones you've probably heard of and many of you might not, tend to want the highest yielding maturity. So they're going out to the term bonds between 20 and 30 years. Then in that in-between period, we often find family offices, again, professional retail that are buying for the purposes of distributing to individuals, you know, kinds of money managers, asset managers. And so we, when we're developing a marketing program, you know, we're targeting different investors for different parts of the yield curve.
Thank you.
Any other?
No. Thank you. That's quite specific. Any further comments?
Sounds good.
Do I hear a motion to approve?
I'll make a motion to approve.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Do you have any further discussion, questions, or comments?
I'd just like to make a comment and thank Mr. DeMars and Rancho Michivio for providing the financial information that we requested. That was very helpful. We appreciate that.
And by the way, we appreciate the tour that we were given, too. It helped put in perspective exactly what you were doing. I knew there was a reason why you did that. We very much appreciate it. Any further discussion, comments from the CEO? Nope. All right. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? None.
I saw that. That sigh of relief. well deserved. That brings us to, are there any public comments or other agenda items? Hearing none, do I hear a motion to adjourn? All in favor?
Did
We need to talk about
did we want to talk about scheduling the next
calendar.
Meeting?
Can we please?
The next meeting is scheduled for October 8th. And I thought at the last meeting, we were directed to have a discussion about an alternative date because I think Mr. Rodecker, and I'm not sure if anybody else, were not going to be able to make it. I mean, we do expect to come back in October requesting approval of an underwriter and an approval in concept for our annual pension obligation prepayment. So just looking at the October calendar, we could do the 15th, and we've confirmed that this room will be available. But beyond that, we're kind of pushing our time limit for our January 2016 pension prepayment.
Do you know when he'll be back?
I don't. I just remember that he said that he was not going to be available on October 8th.
Can this group do the 8th? The 8th works well for me because I've had it in my calendar for
a while. I have a bit of a conflict. But
you do too?
Yeah, we have a conflict. And one of the agenda items we're going to be talking about is some processes that we're probably going to want all of the members here. And that was why.
The 15th works for me as well.
15th sounds.
15 works for me as well.
All right.
Okay. So, Chair Hughes, if somebody wants to make a motion and vote on rescheduling that next meeting.
I move that our next meeting be scheduled for October 15th instead of the 8th.
Sounds great.
Do we have a second?
I will second.
All right. No further discussion. Call the question. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Hearing none. Now is it time for a motion to adjourn?
Yes.
All right. All in favor? Thank you very much.
Are you going
Thank you.
To...